Hey there, everyone. Can you believe it's season 5? My name is Tina Conrad, aka DJ Breast Cancer, and this is a podcast on journeys through cancer. It is also about those making a difference in the world of cancer. My mission is simple: inspire hope, help one person every day. It's where inspiration meets expectation, where reality meets dreams and dreams lost. It's about life after cancer and how others can help you through. It's about creating a bridge between the early stages and late stages of cancer. Cancer is so scary, and life after cancer can be uncharted territory. And for some, it's about adjusting to a diagnosis of stage 4, where there are far fewer options. Sharing our stories and creating dialogue about breast cancer and other cancer realities and research can inspire hope and change, and maybe help you feel just a little bit more normal. This podcast was created to inspire love, hope, and light in the darkness. I also want to shine a light this season on metastatic breast cancer. This podcast is inspired by a shining light, my dear friend and pink sister, Sandy Clausen. She passed away in July of 2018 after a recurrence of breast cancer that was metastatic, and she never gave up fighting. Season 5 is dedicated to my aunt, Rosemary Geiger, who was taken from us far too soon from ovarian cancer. Life changes because of cancer. Life stops abruptly because of cancer. Cancer has many ripple effects on the person and their family. So let's talk about it. Welcome to DJ Breast Cancer, Season 5. Everybody, it is Tina Conrad, aka DJ Breast Cancer. I'm here with a very special guest. Her name is Karen Sullivan, and this is season 5, episode 4. And Karen is a 2-time breast cancer survivor. She had a recurrence and is currently stage 4. But she is amazing. She's thriving, and she's really looking at ways of easy wellness and tips that can help everybody, not just those that are going through breast cancer or cancer diagnoses, but really any kind of life things. And she's the founder of Pretty Wellness. She is an author, soon to be podcaster by the time this comes out, and she is a healthy lifestyle correspondent. So welcome, Karen. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much, Tina, for having me. This is going to be so fun.
I know. I'm so excited. And I'm just so pumped, too, that we were just talking about how you're going to start up a podcast. And I am working on a book project. So we're kind of like, you know, two ships in the sailing in the night. We're going to pass each other and help each other.
Well, and that's what I love, is that you meet people like, Tina, I feel like I know you. But we've been following each other on social media, and it's amazing how the world can really connect like that.
Yes.
And so there needs to be like more of our stories out there, which is awesome that like you'll have the book and the podcast, and you know, I'll have the podcast and the book. So hopefully, you know, everybody will be able to enjoy both of us, you know, together and separate.
Yes, yes, for sure. And I feel like I know you as well. It is amazing what Instagram especially can do. It's such a awesome community of people helping people. And I've really found it to be, you know, such a positive inspiration. So would love to know a little bit about you in your own words.
All right. A little bit about me in my own words. So I, like you, am a Midwestern girl. I grew up in Minneapolis. And you will see, if you see me, I'm always kind of laughing and smiling. Like, I'm the girl who's always wishing on pennies, you know, high-fiving when it turns 11-11. And I joke around and I tell people it's from my Midwestern roots that I got my positivity, whether that's the case or not.
I'm the same. Guilty as charged. So
I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of it. But I live now on the East Coast, and I love that too. I live in Connecticut with my husband and my son, who's 11 years old. And as you'll learn from my story, as a 2-time breast cancer survivor, the first time I was diagnosed, it was 3 months after we were married. So I wasn't pregnant. That was the news we were hoping to tell people within that year, was that we were pregnant, and lo and behold, you know, found out I had breast cancer. So, like all of us, the story changes a little bit. And so my first diagnosis, I think I learned a lot about my own confidence. If I can, at the time I was saying, if I could beat this, then I could do anything. And that really helped, I'll tell you, in my career, because my dream was to work for a big media company. And I reached out to a number of people. I live in Connecticut at ESPN and Disney. And lo and behold, within a few months, I got that, what at the time was my dream job. So it built this big confidence. My second diagnosis really was when I changed my lifestyle. And so that has proven to be, as we all know, with any really intense hardship, eye-opening in a different way. And while we can't control cancer, there's a lot of things we can do to help keep it away. But I wanted to find some ways that I could have some control in my own life, like quite frankly. And so that's when I started to really change my lifestyle, which is how, call it my second life, my second chapter, my second job, we created Pretty Wellness so that I could share my adventures in healthy living and how it was helping me with my second diagnosis, which was stage four. And now I'm 6.5 years living and thriving with stage four.
Wow. We are very actually like parallel universe. So I was married in April of 2013 and then diagnosed in August of 2013. And to your point, just not how you expect to spend, your first year of marriage,
right.
Very, very crazy, but it really pulled us together just as a couple, as a unit, and I guess I can't imagine going through something with someone else. You know what I mean? Like he was just such a rock and such an amazing person during my journey. He's much more quieter and behind the scenes. I'm more the extrovert,
And so we are the same again. That's the two of us as well.
Yes. And like sometimes he's like looking at my feed. He's not even on social media, which is like just, that's what's crazy too. But hey, to each his own, what a crazy universe. So talk to me a little bit more about this Pretty Wellness. Like that's pretty amazing. That you kind of switched gears and found such a different purpose. And I too, the same, had a huge corporate, job and, I was a DMM of like, up to 10 people and it just wasn't everything it was cracked out to be, with a cancer diagnosis, looming in the background.
Well, so what's interesting is everybody told me when I had the baby, and mind you, my son is my miracle baby because we didn't know after my first diagnosis, I had 16 weeks of chemo and you don't know if you're going to be able to get pregnant or not. I was lucky. I'm blessed that, we call my miracle baby, and people at work told me, as soon as the baby's born, your priorities are going to change. And I insisted they would not. I was like, no, I love my job. I love what I do. I'm such a leader, whatever those sentences were, I sent them. But when he turned 3 and he started to talk and I would have to fly a lot to the West Coast, that was when it started to change for me. Even before in my mind, I was like, I know better. Family is what I really value. I don't want to be away so long. And again, this is what I value. So I actually decided to go back to grad school. And so this is before the second diagnosis. So what's interesting is that we joke around like 40th birthday party, everybody's having 40th birthday parties. Since I had left my corporate job to go to grad school to try and not travel as much with my job to be closer to home. But when I got the stage 4 diagnosis, both my advisor and my husband are like, whoa, you cannot continue with grad school right now. I'm like, yeah, I can. I'm like, maybe it'll keep my mind off of it. They're like, yeah, I hear you, but no, you need to focus on your health. You've got to, you were just diagnosed with stage 4. We didn't know if I was going to live 4 months or 4 decades. And so I put, so that there you can put grad school on hold. And I am somebody that I just like to keep busy, especially after you do the second and third opinions and you're figuring out what the treatment plan is going to be. Then you've got this lull in time. And so I started writing and I was researching what people, I still had some access to grad school. And while the internet can bring you a ton of information, I was able to get a lot of credible information about who was thriving with cancer, any cancer, and what were they doing. And so I'd read a lot. I have one of my best friends from childhood lived overseas, and she's a dietitian. And I tell you that only because she was 6 hours ahead of me. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, when I couldn't fall asleep because, you know, I was stressed with what was going on, I would call her and she would help me decipher some of what I was reading. And so I would share it with my friends and my family, and they're like, you should write this. You should write this down. And so this is 2013. And, you know, social media wasn't quite what it is today. It was all about, you know, creating a website or creating a blog. And so my being a marketer, I was like, okay, I want this to be a brand. It doesn't just have to be like the Karen Sullivan show. I want it to be, you know, who knows what I'll build of it. Maybe it'll be something someday. And so my husband and I went through all these different names, and we ended up coming up with Pretty Wellness, because a lot of the modalities that I was reading about, I may have done before, like to be pretty or like to lose a few pounds, but it wasn't about that anymore. It was about being well. And so we then launched on April 2nd of 2014. 6 years. So 2014, we launched Pretty Wellness. And so I had found out all this information about, like, taking small steps towards better wellness, really, or better health, can really help us feel better, arguably look better. And many studies show it helps with our longevity or even halting a reoccurrence. And so all of the above were things I was interested in. And I looked at my audience, could be anybody. It could be somebody like me who was going through, you know, cancer. It could be somebody who was just going through hardship and filled with stress. Or it could be the old me that was sitting in a corporate office that was drinking Diet Dr. Pepper, eating baked Lays, and thinking I was being healthy because they weren't Doritos and like Hawaiian Punch.
Yeah. I can relate to that person, like, on every level. Like, I remember being crazy with work, eating my lean cuisine, drinking my Diet Coke, you know, on the daily, you know, and thinking like I had life figured out. You know what I mean? And it's so amazing, like, what just some more education. Like, that's kind of what we were taught, though, is like, you know, if calories counted, that was the thing that counted. And honestly, I don't think I've counted a calorie in I don't know how many years, but I make so much better decisions of like what goes into my mouth, you know, and it is more about who I want to be as a person. And does this fulfill like that higher good? Or is this just like junk? Or do I just want a taste of something? Like, it's just such a different way of looking at nutrition now than what we were used to or told, like, right, 10, 15 years ago.
Well, right. And I will say, I'm really trying to think about if I ate vegetables back then. and I don't think I did. I mean, every blue moon maybe, or I would go get sushi and there might be some vegetables in them. But now, you know, people always ask me, well, what should I do? And there's many different directions we can take that conversation, you know, always getting somebody involved, a doctor, a dietitian, a naturopath, like somebody if you're really going to want to make significant changes. But the first thing people can do is add more fruits and vegetables in their life. And when you do that, your body does start to feel different. The energy you get from when you're eating foods that really nourish your body is so different. And I will tell you on a side note, not that we care, but like it still felt good. I have a college roommate who I hadn't seen in probably 15 years. And she was the type of girl that she's lovely, but doesn't have a filter. She just says it like it is. And so she told me when I saw her a few months ago, she's like, your skin is so much better now than it was in college. And mind you, my skin wasn't horrible. It wasn't that bad. But I will say there is a vibrancy to it. And I really believe, I mean, I'm still on a chemo pill. Like, my body goes through the ringer, but I do nourish it with so much goodness that there's just incredible benefits.
I love it. And what pill are you on, or what, you know, active treatment are you currently on?
So the treatment I'm on now is Ibrand.
Okay.
And I have to take letrozole with it as well. So when I turned 40 and the cancer came back, we found out that it came back and it was stage 4. What we did is they took me off tamoxifen and they put me with a shot. It wasn't Lupron. It was Zoladex.
Oh yeah. I'm on that currently. Okay.
Yeah.
The big boy.
the big boy, right? The big one that gives you tons of bruises. And
yeah.
But I'll tell you, though, I found the lower that they gave me the shot, the less bruising and the less pain I would have. Hmm. They would try and do it like where they're like, oh, you know, there's a little roll here or something. I'm like, yeah, but let's do it a little lower. I don't know if that works for everybody, but that seemed to work for me. But I did have a hysterectomy 2 years ago, and that was more not recommended. That was more, I was always just kind of afraid of, I don't carry the gene. It's just something in my head that was like, you know, I was scared of ovarian cancer. So I wasn't using them. They were putting them to sleep anyway. And so then they did a full hysterectomy. So I had that done, letrozole and Ibrance now. And then the Xgeva shot, which builds your bones. I do that every few months.
Okay. Okay. And any major side effects to those, or how are you tolerating that treatment?
So great. My side effects are minimal. Now, I'm not sure if that's because I have a high threshold for pain, or again, let's circle back to the lifestyle. Is my body a lot less flexible than it ever was? Yes. Could I pretend that I can do a split or look pretty in yoga? No, I can't. however, I feel pretty good. My weight has maintained, like over the last 6 years, maybe I've gained back 3 pounds that I lost, but nothing significant. My hair is a lot thinner than it used to be, but I have hair. There's definitely the whole menopause symptoms, being dry, all that girly stuff is very different. But there's all sorts of solutions for all this. And when one looks at it, and I look at it, it's like, all right, it's my new normal. I want to be here. I've got a kid in the family that I love. You know, I love to be able to see all the beauty in life, because we are surrounded by so much beauty if you choose to look at it that way. And so, you know what? I every now and then get sad at I had really gorgeous hair when I was younger. But oh well, you know what? Like, okay. And the 3 pounds that, you know, I don't know. I do eat really healthy when I go out to eat, but I still go out to eat quite a bit. You know, there's different things you can do for all of the above.
And I love like, you know, your small steps formula. So like, it doesn't necessarily have to feel so overwhelming, but it is kind of taking back some of that narrative or that control, or, and anyone can do it, whether they're, you know, facing cancer or not facing cancer. But I do think that there are a lot of small steps that add up to be big things, for sure.
Oh, I mean, to me, small steps are everything. Most people, hopefully, do not have the fire underneath us that we have had, or, you know, with the stage 4 diagnosis, you know, I thought I knew a lot about cancer until I got that. Then I learned differently. And in fairness, again, there's so much more information, and the conversations are out there about stage 4. I think people are much more aware than they were 6 years ago. And so I really believe that taking small steps in any habit can be helpful. And then you keep, you know, oftentimes you keep going because a small step is, you know, achievable and you feel good about it. Maybe you see some changes and then you keep doing more.
Yeah. It is crazy. Like all the little differences that you can make. And then do you incorporate exercise as well, or is it more nutrition, or like how wide is your range of like what your tips are kind of in terms of wellness? Is it all encompassing?
So it is all encompassing. I think that was the biggest key that when I started doing all that research, what I learned about wellness is that it's really holistic. And when I say holistic, I don't mean like woo woo, you know, really out there. I mean, it's not just about one thing. You could have the greatest diet, but if you're not moving and you're really sedentary, and it's easier said than done, you commute to work, you're at a desk all day, you know, you're sitting at a kid's after school activity, you know, sometimes it's tough to find that time, but it's really important that our bodies are active, and you don't have to go to the gym for an hour. You can just be power walking, you know, in many different places a few times throughout the day, however your day allows. I believe in non-toxic living. And that could be products, whether it's my makeup or it's the cleaning products. And I believe there's small steps there because, you know, there's sometimes a money barrier or an information barrier that you need to learn. And the biggest hurdle, I think, for, at least I'll speak for myself, for me, was the mindfulness component. I didn't realize how huge and how powerful it could be to have some mindful practices, easy, simple, mindful practices. But the key to it is we might know it, but we have to do it. You know, if you're getting stressed, doing 2 minutes of a breathing exercise, it sounds, oh, well and good, or, oh, it didn't really work for me. But just like any habit, you got to practice it and keep doing it, right? Self-talk, you know, sounds simple, so powerful, but you have to keep doing it because it's super awkward to try and tell yourself not to talk to yourself like that for a while. But once you get there, you know, I catch myself saying things to myself now and I'm like, wow, I have evolved. That is great, Karen. Pat myself on the back, right?
I've done that actually during running, like, you know, during training segments, you know, for like half marathons and stuff, like it can feel really overwhelming. Like when you get started, you know, like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm ever going to do six more miles. Like last mile was just incredible. Like it's so hard, but I have found that like when I talk to myself and like, just be like, hey, you're doing a really good job. You know what I mean? Like, and sometimes it's as simple as that. And just like, I'm like, yeah, I am, you know, and it's like this whole conversation in my head, but like, it just kind of calms me and like level sets. And it's like, okay, like you can do this, you got this, you know, but it's just this whole thing happening. And it does lead to like such, you know, greater results. I found like I need more of that positive reinforcement within myself and from others too. Like it's just maybe how I'm wired, but that's just what I need. Yes.
We are the same person. We keep saying that. I do too. But I have learned, and I'm telling you, it's been more recent. You know, everything we evolved, everything is like, as, and maybe some of it's being a parent, as my son's getting to an age now, like I remember being 11. Now, granted, he's a very different person than I was at that age. But nonetheless, I'm like, all right, I don't want him to always look for the external accolades. They're great when you get them, but you can't control it all the time, mm-hmm. right? But what if inside, like, you got to feel great about what you do inside. Now, I mean, hey, like, stay tuned on that one. I hope I'm doing the right things, but but I'm trying to do it, you know, with that, I'm trying to do it myself too, because it definitely wasn't how I was wired. It was always about like, you know, I got to achieve the next to the next to the next to the next so that I could, you know, feel good about what I was doing. But instead now I'm trying to flip that story. And when I catch myself, and we all catch ourselves like being a little hard on ourselves, is I notice it. And then I try and like, even if it feels awkward, just say to myself, you know, whatever it might be, like, I'm scared of this. I'm scared of this. It's okay. It's okay to be scared, but like, you're going to be okay. There's only so much you can do.
Yeah, I think, you know, leaning into the fear and these mindful things and understanding your triggers. And I actually went to therapy like long time ago, totally different life at that time. But just some of the coping mechanisms that this person taught me have been very helpful, you know, just even later in life through cancer and just kind of understanding my triggers, understanding like the filter that my brain is taking me through, and understanding that you can change the script, you know. So if, you know, for in my case, I never had children and it was always a very painful thing. And if, you know, someone getting pregnant, that news is like out and it brings back these memories, you know, I have the opportunity to say to myself, I have two beautiful goddaughters. I love them with all of my heart. Yeah. And I am going to be the best godmother I can ever, ever possibly be. And like, rather than get down on myself and like, you know, go to a place of, you know, oh, I never had children. It's such a sad thing. Yeah. And it's sad. And I did live through the sadness. I'm not saying you can't feel your feelings. You have to, but you can't stay there. And so sometimes it is just like that script that you tell yourself, like, okay, I feel this trigger. I'm going to insert this, you know, and it's, I'm sure you feel the same, you know, with the stage four, like, you know, you have the opportunity to live in that sadness or to do something, you know, with this diagnosis and live your best life.
Well, right. And I find it sounds really simple, but I mean, I have never been in such a dark place until I got that diagnosis. And I was so scared, and it hurt, right? It's dark. You're crying, so you have a headache. And then when I just started to be like, all right, I'm going to have hope. I'm going to have hope because why not? Okay, you know, I know the statistics are pretty low for me, but like, hey, maybe I change the statistic. And, you know, maybe I was lying to myself or maybe not. But, you know, it fueled me in a positive way, which kept me putting one foot in front of the other. And so when I'd have, you know, I went through radiation for the spots that they saw in the sternum and the spine. And it made it a little bit easier. And then even now, you know, I'm not kidding myself. But on the same note, I'm really just trying to look at, I have an amazing life. I believe I'm going to live to be 94. Why not? Like, what harm is that doing me or anybody?
Yeah.
And I do believe that medical community is catching up with us. I know from my work with the Cancer Couch Foundation that it's a foundation where we solely support two state-of-the-art labs for metastatic breast cancer research. That's at Dana-Farber and Memorial Sloan Kettering. And the founder, Rebecca Timlin-Scalera, she handpicked these up-and-coming scientists that are pretty amazing. All sorts of reasons are amazing. But I've seen that, you know, and I know a little bit about what they're working on. And for people like me that, you know, if what I'm on right now stops working, they're trying to figure out what the next step is. And these are just the two that I know of. I'm sure that there's many other really smart researchers out there. And so I always want to tell people that, you know, yes, I do want to see the glass half full. That's what works for me. I hope it works for other people because then you find joy, right? But there is the ability to have hope because the medical community is working fast. You know, it may not be there yet, but they're looking for treatments that can help us live a long and you know, hearty, good quality of life. So I believe in that. And I do believe through everything I've done, you know, hence why we launched Pretty Wellness, is I do believe that there are many healthy lifestyle practices that you can adopt into your life that are going to make you feel better, whether you're going through cancer, whether you're going through some other hardship, or you're just living in the day-to-day of the stressful world we're in.
I love that. And we were chatting a little bit before we started recording and talking about kind of this next subject of early stage and late stage, and you've lived in both worlds. You know, you've been in both zones, and I do get asked a lot. You know, I'm trying to lean into that more in the past season and in this current season, and just try to bring more awareness to people and rather have them be such separate islands. Like, why don't we build a bridge? Why don't we talk about it? What can we do as just people to help each other, you know, through these tough times? And we were talking about your friend Rebecca, we were talking about Cancer Couch, but I know you feel very strongly about research, but would love to know a little bit about, you know, what you feel now being in both worlds, what can an early stage person do?
So, you know, it's a hard question because there are times that, you know, I would go to my oncologist and say every appointment, is there a chance this is never going to come back? And he'd be like, yeah, there is. And so I really didn't think it would come back. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I would say this to both, to anybody who's touched with cancer, is that kind of, you know, not know who you are, know your audience, but, you know, it depends if you're the caregiver or the patient itself. If you're the patient itself, you know, be aware and understand that you got to keep, you know, you might get your 5-year mark, or I was at my 9-year mark of being like in remission or cancer free, whatever you want to call it, when it came back. It can happen to anyone. And I don't like to say that because I don't want to scare people. Like, you know, some people would say, oh, you've got a 30% chance of it coming back of a reoccurrence. And other people would say, well, you've got a 70% chance of it not coming back. Right. Yeah. So there is a chance. And that's, you know, like that's unfortunate with cancer. I would say to all camps, is cancer the right word? I want to, like to everybody, there is a lot of hope. Like I said, because of research, there is, you know, I believe in taking care of yourself. And then I think something that we all might say, and it's so much easier said than done, is try and figure out like what really moves you and do that.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And so if that's talking on the phone with your girlfriends on your way to work to make your job better, because you have a, you know, not everybody can quit their job and go off and do what they want to do. But most people can try and find some time in their day to do something they love. I used to joke around that that to me was Days of Our Lives. No matter how bad
like
my job was.
The hourglass.
I had my friends from Salem, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's where you were going. Like, how do we, I think it's just all about support. You know, stage four, stage two, stage three, stage one, whatever it might be, we all get a diagnosis and you hear the word. If you haven't had it before, whether you have family history or not, you hear you've got cancer and oftentimes your mind goes to the worst place. So we have all felt that. So I think it's just being open to support each other and letting caregivers in to help support us as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's actually come up a lot in a podcast roundtable I did, and then, you know, even with different guests too. But, you know, you see an oncologist as an early stager, and I mean, I feel like they give you stats and, you know, you get pamphlets you take home, that kind of thing. But there really isn't this, like, you know, true discussion of like how this really can come back. Do you know what I mean? And I think even they want to like sometimes put their head in the sands or sugarcoat it or, you know, not talk about it. And I just think as a society, we don't want to talk about it. And it is something that we should talk about. It doesn't mean that you like have to live every day thinking it's coming back if you're an early stager, but I think you need to be aware of the fear and lean into the fear and, okay, so what are you going to do with that information? And then you're such an amazing case of like, you have it and, you know, you've adjusted now to this new kind of normal, which is not easy, but you're still trying to like, again, it's when you have that sense of purpose, I think it does change everything and you control the narrative rather than something else.
Well, and you know what? I will be honest. Like, I struggle with, do I want, you know, I really kind of loved being 9 years thinking cancer was never going to come back.
Yeah.
Now, you know, maybe the narrative could have been like, listen, it could come back, but there's every reason to think it won't come back. There are plenty of 70% of people who don't. So, I don't know. I, you know, something I say all the time, and anybody in marketing will really get this, is like, know your audience. I will tell you that when I found out, which by the way, was Friday the 13th, which I historically always thought was a good luck day. When I found out that in fact, the suspicious lesion on my sternum that we saw from a CAT scan, you know, my second time around, that it was cancer. My oncologist did not say to me it was stage four. And because I was not really aware, I had stage 2A before. I didn't realize that any time cancer leaves the point of origin, it's considered stage four. I didn't. It wasn't till I went for my second opinion and the doctor asked if I knew what was going on. And I was like, yeah, totally. I'm like, my cancer is back. There's only a little bit. It's in my sternum, you know. Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, so no one told you that it stayed. I mean, he said it differently. No one, in a kind-hearted, you know, mellow-mannered way, he said it's stage four. And that was shell-shocking to us. Yeah. And I believe that my original oncologist knew me well and knew that I would be incredibly scared to hear that. Now, granted, they were going to have to tell me at some point soon, right? It wasn't that they were keeping things at all. But I think that knowing, you know, my doctors knew me and knew that that probably initially wasn't going to be something that was going to help me put one foot in front of the other. Now, again, we could take this conversation many sides, you know, different ways, because some people be like, they should tell you right away. We didn't have the full pathology back. We didn't have all, like I stand behind my experience. Mm-hmm. But I will say, you know, different people need different things. Had I known for 9 years that it was going to come back, or there was a high probability of it coming back, I might have been more scared. And honestly, I wasn't. Maybe every now and then I would be. Hmm. And I know the statistics now, but I try and think of myself, someone's got to be outside the statistic, and that's going to be me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, like the Cancer Couch means so much to you. We were chatting a little bit about the founder of it, Rebecca, and she was on Wildfire on the cover of Changemakers, and she truly was a changemaker. Would just love to know a little bit about her and the life that she led, and, you know, kind of how you're carrying on a lot of her legacy, you know, in the future as well.
Okay. I hope I can do justice to this. So I met Rebecca right after she was diagnosed. Three different people had said to her, you got to connect with this girl. She's got stage 4. She, you know, founded this small healthy lifestyle company, Pretty Wellness. You'll connect with her because in essence, you guys are like, would be great friends. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of it, is through all the stage 4, you know, work that she's done that I've helped a lot, but it pales in comparison to the mountains that she has moved with the foundation. She was a neuropsychologist by trade. She actually had 2 PhDs. She is an incredibly bright woman. And when she was diagnosed initially with stage 4, she then found out within a week or two later that it was actually stage 3. And with that, she looked at her family and said, well, I am not leaving anybody behind. I got that news. I was so afraid that I was going to, you know, like the worst was going to happen. I, you know, she was somebody who she and her husband would go to a lot of fundraisers. And so they knew a little bit about the fundraising world. She's like, why can't we do it? Now, she and her husband are like a beautiful love story. They met at college. They love music. And so they decided that she started the foundation, and their key event has always been this fundraiser called the Cancer Beat, where they bring in a big, big name concert. This year it was the Wailers, as in the original Wailers, like that was Bob Marley's band. And I mean, again, there's so many directions I could go with her. She is a brilliant and smart woman. She was able almost single-handedly to get this foundation started, run it, raise $3 million for metastatic breast cancer research. And this is a private foundation. She never took a paycheck from it. She just, you know, kind of ate some of the costs that they needed to, because they wanted to put all donations towards metastatic breast cancer research. And the other beauty of this foundation is there's an anonymous donor. So every dollar that is donated, this anonymous donor, you know, adds another dollar to it. So the foundation is, you know, grew up to be her baby. She has 2 gorgeous kids that are just like amazing in their own ways. She was also just as dynamic as she is or was, you know, she was also a real person. And so when we lived near each other. So, you know, we met early on because of the cancer. I became a board member, you know, shortly after she began the organization, and we became really good friends. And so, you know, I would sit with her on the side of a baseball field, and we would talk about, you know, maybe a recent travel that she had been on, or, you know, something that I was doing. We actually had talked about starting a podcast called Health Insanity. And we had all these big, you know, dreams, not just as cancer survivors, but as friends. And let me tell you, like, she had so many friends. I mean, there just was so much to love about Rebecca, because she was that beautiful soul. And as her husband will always say, she wore her soul on the outside. And so you could have a conversation with Rebecca and you felt like you had been friends with her forever. So, like I said, there's just, you know, I haven't talked really publicly about it. I said a few things on my Instagram. So I wasn't really prepared to say anything.
I get it.
But I'm speaking my heart. She's just so deeply missed on so many levels. But she is this person who really believed in energy and seeing signs. And so, like, I do know she's here with me. You know, I'm close to their sisters, and I still connect with her husband. And, you know, they're in our neighborhood. So I will tell you, I don't have specifics yet but I know that this foundation and the amazing work that she did, the monumental work that she did, is going to go on.
Yeah. And touch other lives. Like, how beautiful. And if you get a chance, you know, even that wildfire article was really beautiful. And I truly was inspired by her story too. So thank you for sharing it. So it feels so much more personal though, like coming from a friend, you know, and and that, like, I had a friend too. And it's interesting you talk about how people don't really explain that cancer cells appearing elsewhere, you know, is stage four, because that kind of happened, like, to me with my friend, and she might have been aware of it. I remember her saying it came back and it was like in a different part of her body, and they found these cancer cells, and I just thought everything was okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, it came back, but it's okay. You know, it's okay. And because my mom lived through a recurrence too, and, you know, came back. She initially had, I think, like 2B, and then it came back and it was like 2C or something, you know. But anyway, so in my mind, that was my experience. No one really talks about it. And then all of a sudden, like, it really escalated, and it was, you know, very, very serious, obviously. But I think in my mind, I just didn't really think of all of that, you know. And so I do think that there's so much more that can be done, just like nutrition, just like wellness, that can just educate us for, like, what the upper, you know, what could happen. And it doesn't mean it will happen. And we need to do more that if it does happen, that we have research and we can find ways to, you know, have people live long, long, healthy, happy lives, you know. But it's just such a crazy journey. And I remember her face and seeing her face. And I remember exactly like where I was when she told me, and I just didn't register like the level of seriousness that I think she was experiencing in that moment. And so it kind of brings me back, you know, to that place, because I don't think that they talk about it very much.
If nothing else, it's a really hard conversation. And everybody, I will say this, I've been saying this for years, is everybody's cancer experience is different. Just because, you know, I had ER/PR positive, HER2 new negative, stage 2A bilateral mastectomy with 16 weeks of, like, well, ACT and then Taxol, and somebody else has had that, doesn't mean, like, their cancer may show up slightly different, their experience, their side effects, like, and so that works on the positive side, but it also works on the, you know, the scary side too.
Mm-hmm. And we
it is a hard.
And we are the same person. I had the same kind. Oh, crazy. Well, I'd love to talk a little bit too about this passion project of yours, which is writing a book and helping to kind of be that guide for cancer patients, called Happiness Through Hardship. And I know now you're kind of taking that message and turning it into a podcast, which is going to air starting on April 2nd. So would love to know, like, what kind of was the impetus for you for writing that? And, you know, what joy or experiences have you had from sharing that book, you know, to the greater world?
Well, so I'll tell you, there were a few different answers to that. And I don't really know which one is the strongest one. Writing is cathartic. And so, you know, when you write, you're somewhat taking care of yourself. And so when I started journaling way back when, and this book is about this balance of sharing my story so people can relate, but also giving some tips for the patient and the caregivers, because when I was first diagnosed and I went to the store and looked for books, they were all 300 pages. And I'm like, I do not want to read a book that's that big. And then there were some other books that I read, what might've been a little bit funny and about cancer, and it was totally somebody's memoir. And that can be a beautiful thing too, but I couldn't relate because that wasn't my story and it was so raw for me. So I wanted to create something that you're diagnosed, it could be the first week or it could be the first year, but that you have a whole bunch of firsts. And so that would kind of be like that friend that helps hold your hand, because I was that for many people. I had a woman named Megan who, she was a friend of a friend of a friend from college. She still lives in Denver. We never met until a year after I had my first diagnosis, but she did hold my hand through a lot of it. And so the hospital that I first did all my treatments at would then give my phone number out to cancer patients when they were first diagnosed. And so that can't scale. I can't talk to every single person, of course, that's diagnosed. And so I was like, you know what? Maybe I put this in a book form. That way people have access to the information I give. Now, I'm not saying any of it is like brain surgery, but it's advice that I think would have been really helpful if I knew, or things that I learned throughout the process that could be helpful, but yet not overwhelming, because we're overwhelmed enough when you're first diagnosed. So I wrote that, and then I had started writing. I wasn't sure if I wanted to add a lot of wellness into it, since Pretty Wellness has been, you know, fueling really my being the last 6 years. And at the time when I was writing, it had been 3 years, because I started writing it about 3 years ago. And I wanted to, going back to the cancer couch, you know, Rebecca will always say, you need more money for research to make a dent in what's going on with breast cancer, let alone metastatic breast cancer. And I always felt kind of guilty, like I'm not made of money. The money that I'm giving, yeah, it's doubled. It's not that much. Now, I will tell you, she will say, and many other people will say, listen, a dollar here today is a dollar more than we had yesterday. So, but I wanted to do more. And so then I was like, if I write a book, then maybe some of the proceeds can go to the cancer couch. So that is what I did. When I first wrote it, it was an ebook because I wanted to get it out there for Breast Health Awareness Month and make some money for the cancer couch, which I did. And then the feedback was like, Karen, I want to send this to a friend who was just diagnosed. And that wasn't what I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting people, like, they're diagnosed, they go on Amazon or the bookstore, look for it. But I had so many caregivers or friends say, I want to send this to my friend. How do I do it? And you can do it on Amazon, but it's a lot tougher. Plus, sometimes you just want to write in the margin. So then I brought that book to actually a paperback and hardcover, and the second half of it is journal and note-taking pages. So that way you can give it as a gift. The person hopefully will read it, take some notes, or they can just bring it to their doctor's appointments, because as we know, like, it's always good to kind of have a notebook with you. And so I'm really proud of it. It's pretty. I think it's helpful. It's my heart. And the feedback on it has been great. And I will tell you, because I've been somebody who always sees the glass half full, that's why the title means a lot to me, Happiness Through Hardship, because my hardship is cancer. But, you know, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of other people that have hardship on, you know, of different magnitudes that haven't had cancer. Yeah. And so, yes, the book is very specific to cancer, but I have had a lot of people reach out to me and say, hey, I bought this as a caregiver to a friend, but I read it and it helped me think through things. I'm going through a divorce, or, you know, I've got this other type of disease that I'm going through. And so there's this sense of positivity and how you can tap into it throughout, Or also, and I will always say, like, positivity works for me. If it doesn't work for you, like, do what you need to do, especially when you're in the depths of the hardship. And so that's where I really believe the book could be for anybody, but really specifically, you know, so I would love cancer centers across the country to carry them, to hand them out. And I worked with one locally. We did a donate a book. So other people like could buy the book and donate it to the cancer center. Now the cancer center has, you know, enough books for a half year to hand out to people that are diagnosed. So I'd love to see that. The Happiness Through Hardship can extend through the podcast, where it can be more of, let's share stories about when people went through hardship and what are some of the ways, what are some of the, like, the advice that they might give to others in their shoes.
Yeah. I love that. It's beautiful. And I don't know about you, but when I went through breast cancer, I think I got about 20 bracelets. So I think having something that's actually useful, like a book, like a journal that you can take along, that's this companion guide for these appointments, like, what a great gift that you can give somebody, because people really don't know what to give gift. You know what I mean? So
right.
I do think having something like this is such a blessing, you know, such a companion guide to carry along. So I love that. Like, it's such a great gift that you can give somebody and, you know, make a difference and allow for people to take notes. And it's, you know, sounds like it's very adaptable and flexible for whatever person's, you know, situation may be.
Well, thank you. I love it. I didn't realize how much I was going to love it. It really is a piece of me, and everything from the cover. And I'm so proud of that, because the graphic designer and I worked on it. And then when it was at the publisher's house, I'm like, don't change a thing. I love everything about this cover. And so,
and I am going to finish this season, and then I am starting on a book too, a book project. So we will likely be in touch with each other to help each other through, because that's what amazing women do is, yes, you know, they, you know, I think women are so good at that. They're good at helping each other through things and, you know, through difficult times. And if they know something, they want to share that information and just help, you know, which is, I think, why we're each in the places that, you know, we are in.
Well, I agree with you. And I, of course, I am here for you and anybody else for that matter that's embarking on this journey. I think it's really powerful when you get your words out there. And maybe it's a little old school, like, it's a book. I mean, our words are out there through, like, you know, social media, and, you know, our words, in a sense, our audio words are here through this podcast. There's really just something special about that book, that hardcover, paperback, whatever it might be, legacy that you leave. You know, hopefully it's here with us for a long time, but, and the impact that you make, you know, with the book.
I love that.
And so you're going to love it. And people are going to be able, you know, whatever that might be, I can tell from the force that you are, you know, such a positive force with all the work that you do, that we need more and more stories like that.
And just this week, I had two different people reach out to me about my podcast. And, like, sometimes I have to, like, tell my husband, like, look at what amazing little thing this is. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I'm inspired by people. Like, it's just amazing that you can touch people and have this effect on people. And so this morning I was reading to him just two things, and I'm sure you get reviews and, like, people feedback, and, you know, I'm such a feedback person too, you know, and I just love knowing that what I do can make a difference, you know, in someone else's life. And it's truly so inspiring when you have people reach out to you and just say, you know, like, thank you for your podcast. And I'm sure in your case, thank you for your book. You know, it really does mean the world to me. And, you know, just what you can bestow on this world, you know, it's, you don't even know, it's infinite, like, what you have the opportunity to do.
Well, I will tell you that I love your, whether it's your motto, hope, help one person every day. I think that is so smart, because especially when we're all dabbling in this space, like, we want to do something, you don't know what you want to do. Is it a book? Is it a podcast? Is it a video channel? Is it, you know, whatever it might be, a blog? Is it something totally different? You know, classes. I don't know. I'm just throwing things out now, right? But, and we get overwhelmed because we see, you know, what everybody else is doing, right? And, but when you always kind of keep it back to your roots, and I guess Simon Sinek would say, what is your why? You know, if your why is you want to help somebody out and you help that one person out, well, then you've helped that one person out. And that one person oftentimes leads to more, leads to more, leads to more, leads to more. And so then helping one person out every day could be every hour, right? Like, but it's helping one person. You just made one person's life better. And I know you've helped like hundreds of thousands of people, but in your mindset, you're still probably like, all right, good day, bad day. I really just love that I have made a difference to help one person out.
Yeah. And you as well. Like, I know it's like such a, it's amazing when you can stop and think like what impact you can have on other people, in their lives. So speaking of touching other people and giving some advice, I'm sure your book and your, you know, wellness program, and your website have so many tips. And I would just love to know, like, if you have one Tina tip you want to impart on the listeners, and it could be someone, you know, newly diagnosed with stage 4, it could be someone that's just in the midst of the battle. What would be your one, you know, advice that you want to share today on this show?
All right. So I say this with the caveat being like, there's so many things that I could say. And, you know, but there are things I think we all, you know, bring somebody to your appointments, find the right person that's supportive. You know, I think, but my big but is going to be try and find some positivity, because that can help fuel you and make this journey of cancer a little bit easier. Now, my first post ever was called "What Lipstick and Dancing Naked Taught Me About Cancer." And then the answer was have fun. And so when I was first diagnosed back in 2004, there were little things like I chose to do, I didn't want to go out to a gym because my immunity was low. So, I mean, this dates me, but I bought DVDs to exercise to, and I bought Carmen Electra striptease, which you're fully clothed, by the way. And what was the other one? Paula Abdul cheer, because they made me laugh, because I was upbeat, I had good music, and I just thought it was silly. You know, or sometimes before I would get in the shower, I'd be like, all right, I got to dance it out. I got to dance it out. I got to dance it out. So by the way, that's when I said dancing naked. It was like right outside the shower. You know, lipstick, and I write about this in the book, is that I don't know why, but the day after I was diagnosed, we went to get something to eat. I wasn't very hungry, and it was across the street from this like nice makeup store. And so I went in. Of course, I didn't tell her what was going on. But I realized, like, I could have this whole conversation with somebody that doesn't know me. She has no idea I was diagnosed with cancer. And I can talk about pretty lipstick. And you know what? For a moment, I had a little bit of fun. And so I say that because not everything's going to be easy. You know, call a spade a spade. But if you can find little ways to have fun, it may make your journey with cancer a little easier. And so, you know, those, and that kind of just goes with, it's really not just my theme. It really is my mantra. It is somebody, like I said, from the beginning, is like, I always wished on pennies, and I always try and instill a little reason for me to smile, because it then makes my day a little better. And it gives me the control to make the day a little better, because I can't control cancer and I can't control a lot of things.
Yeah. I love that. I love the whole lipstick and dancing naked. That's amazing. I might take that as my mantra too. So I love it. But I too have found like lipstick can change who you are as a person too. And I actually noticed that during my whole cancer journey, is like, you pop on a bold lip and girl, like, you can take on the world.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Like, it can change you. It can literally change you. And, you know, maybe we're just girly girls, or maybe that's just the way we're wired, you know, but it really does have, for me, it has transformative, you know, things. And I read Geraldine O'Brien, I think is her name.
Yeah.
I wore lipstick.
Lipstick to my mastectomy.
And I love that book. And like, I loved just like her outlook on everything too. So it was just always awesome. But lipstick in, you know, it does. You put on a bold lip, watch out.
You know, or even, you know, just, it doesn't, for us, it is lipstick. It sounds like, you know, for other people, it's like, you know, maybe it's clothes or maybe it's not, or maybe it's, you know, you see people with the pink wigs or, you know, I think a lot of people through cancer, and if you're not like this, that's totally fine, like totally good. But like they find this sense of boldness in them. They try new things because like their whole world's turning upside down, and that can be fun. And mind you, I will also tell you that back in 2004, there wasn't as much access to all the information we have now. And so I was hibernated through my chemo. I could work from home. I sometimes went into work. I didn't do anything social because I didn't know if I could with my immunity. And that to me was a beautiful thing because I'm always so social. Mm-hmm. And so we would, you know, I loved sushi. So my husband would go buy vegetarian sushi, or we'd make it. We'd sit on the floor and we'd pretend like we were in one of those, like, I think they're called tatami rooms in a like Japanese restaurant. And we would do it at home. Like there's so many things that you can make fun that are different than what you've done before.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I forgot totally where I was going, but yes, I remember not eating sushi for a long time, and that was obviously very sad, but I love how you took the vegetarian route. That's awesome. And I too, oh, that's where I was going. I had a medical leave for about 6 weeks or maybe even closer to 2 months. And I was such a go, go, go Energizer bunny, but that time was truly like sacred time for me. And it was just kind of a time of reflection and introspection. And I will forever look back at that time as kind of like an opportunity to reset. And it was really a beautiful thing. And I will never like be sad about that, having that space and that moment, you know, for my journey.
Again, we should count how many times we've said this in the podcast is that you and I just share such similar vibes.
Yeah.
Because that's how I was too. And, you know, you learn a lot about yourself, you know, during hard times, you learn a lot about yourself, like in the stillness too. And so being the Energizer Bunny and putting my, you know, life lightly paused was good for me.
Yeah. Totally relate. Well, I know we could go on forever here, and actually I might have to call you in my car on my way home. But anyway, I would love to know your social media handles and where guests can find your book, because I would love to leave the guests with that as a final parting.
Well, thank you. I would love for people to follow me, and it's a community, like comment if that's your thing. I am at Pretty Wellness on Instagram, and I love Instagram. I'm there daily giving lots of, you know, healthy lifestyle tips. I am on Facebook as well as Twitter. I am, my book, you can buy it online at Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. It's in some bookstores throughout the country, maybe not all of them, but I mean, I end up buying my books through Amazon. So it's, you know, Happiness Through Hardship, and, you know, by Karen Sullivan, and I'm, you know, Karen with a C and a Y, so C-A-R-Y-N, Sullivan. And you can get it in hardcover or paperback. And then there's an ebook too, like, because like I said, I did that before, but it's been really amazing to me, the love and the feedback I've received about how people have found the book useful, whatever stage that they're at in their journey, caregiver, patient. And so, you know, sending it as a gift to a friend has, you know, makes my heart warm. You know, it really does make me feel great. So hopefully I'll be able to connect with all of you and reach out and let us know what you thought of the podcast episode too.
Yeah, I would love that. And I will link to all your, like your Instagram account and all that amazing stuff too. So thank you, Karen. It's been awesome. I knew we would be friends and we are. So, you know, there we go.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so honored to be talking to DJ Breast Cancer.
Awesome. Well, hey, you have an amazing day, and we will be in touch soon.
Sounds great. Bye
okay.
for now.
Take care. Bye. I want to give a special thanks to my amazing producer, Nicholas Lay. I also want to give a special thanks to the band Roustabout and their song Pariah, featured on this podcast production. Also, a shout out to my friend and photographer, Melissa, at Whirligig Photography. She just happens to see my vision. If you can do me a favor and enjoy this podcast, leave me a 5-star review on Apple. Remember, reviews do matter. And for all you survivors and thrivers out there, I'm sending you my love. Speaking of sending some love, if you want to send requests or send a beautiful card and some cheer, reach out to Soul Light Cards. They're on Instagram or Facebook. It was created in memory of Lisa Towery. They are specifically for people with cancer or cancer survivors. It is carried on with the beautiful works of art and inspiration by Debbie Towery. Thank you and have a great day.